Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Training Tidbits podcast show. I'm your host, Ryan Cartledge from Animal Training Academy, and I'm extremely excited about having you here with us today and being back in your eardrums to talk all about best practice behavior management for what is said to be another amazing episode. I can't wait to dive in and learn all about today's guest and their learning odyssey. If you haven't checked the past episodes out yet, then make sure to head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and you can listen to them all there, or you can also find them on iTunes and /or on Stitcher. There is definitely something there for absolutely everyone, as well as some sensational up and coming episodes planned over the next wee while. Just before we do get started, though, I would like to take this opportunity to share some of the really exciting things happening with Animal Training Academy. If you like the conversations in these podcasts, then I want to invite you to continue them with like-minded people within the ATA membership area. Some of the ingredients of the membership include a forums with hundreds of training videos and projects where together the community helps problem solve different training situations. We then have the private Facebook group where we share animal training successes, members updates, and relevant content from the web. On top of this, we have WhatsApp chat groups with separate group chats for horses, dogs, cats, birds, exotic animals, and more. Via these groups and direct from your smartphones, you can engage in text message-based conversations with an international community of positive reinforcement animal trainers. And then to top it off, we connect live twice a month in members-only live web classes, where we dive even deeper into the topics you learn about here. To find out more about membership and how you can join the community and carry on the conversation, visit www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click the membership button in the main menu. But now, on to today's guest, one Hayley Ellis. Hayley joined Apopo, landmine and tuberculosis detection rats in April 2015 after receiving her master's degree in behavioral psychology, focusing on animal detection, learning and technology. She also holds a certificate in veterinary nursing, and previous research includes behavioral ethology, welfare and human and animal interactions. She is currently completing her PhD through Waikato University in New Zealand in collaboration with Apopo. Her research focuses on investigating variables that affect rat detection, accuracy, and learning. So it's my very great pleasure to welcome one, Hayley Ellis, to the show today. Hayley, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
You're welcome, and it is really great. I love it when we do podcasts with New Zealanders. We don't do it often, so I'm excited.
Excellent.
I'm going to dive straight into the first question today, Hayley. Could you please take us back and explain for everyone listening what inspired you to get involved with animal detection learning research, and a little bit about your academic journey from figuring out that this is what you wanted to do, which led you to studying preference assessments and discrimination training with African giant pouch rats in Tanzania?
Right. I originally trained as a veterinary nurse. So I was working hands-on with animals, looking after their health. And I kind of got coerced back into university, so to speak, by a few good friends. The Waikato University has a really great animal welfare and behavior lab. So I got really involved with that and the various species there. I actually found out about Apopo by chance over the internet. And I said to my supervisor at the time, that's what I want to do. How do I go about doing that? So that's how I ended up doing my master's with visual discrimination with chickens. But that was all a means to an end to get me over to Tanzania and start working with these giant rats that I was so excited to hear about.
Yeah, really cool. Can you tell us a little bit more about your master's? And you said you did visual discrimination in chickens?
Yeah, so it's actually like quite an interesting wee operant chamber. We had a screen at the back and we would show videos of squares moving, either not touching each other or touching each other. And we were trying to see if chickens can discriminate motion just based on parallax. So motion parallax is how objects move past each other at varying speeds depending on how far or close they are from the observer. So we were trying to emulate that with a screen and with these chickens, and if the chickens saw 3D motion via this motion parallax, they would press the red button. And if they didn't, they would press the green button. It was really interesting, Masters. I think a lot of that was because the technology was so interesting. We had to create this operant chamber with a screen. And eventually the chickens like to just pick the actual screen in the moving squares. So we had to move that screen out so the chickens couldn't actually touch it and kind of almost force them to pick these red and green keys on either side. It was really interesting and challenging from a technical aspect as well as from a behavioral.
And technology is one of the other areas you're interested in, isn't it?
Yeah, I grew up on a dairy farm. So like my background is very practical, like real world applied situations. And I think a lot of behaviorism is very much about having animals in boxes in these very non-naturalistic kind of environments. So I'm really interested in technology that works with how can we pull out this behavior and draw some conclusions from these, you know, not naturalistic environments.
Yeah, cool. And a very New Zealand for everyone listening, growing up on a dairy farm. and I think at a quick look at your Facebook page, and I saw that you got to meet one of the most influential people with regards to that area, Temple Grandin.
I was very, very lucky.
Whereabouts
did
you?
I was in at the ABAI, so that's Applied Behavior Analysis International Conference. It's a very large conference in America, and Temple Grandin was one of the keynote speakers. So I was very grateful and lucky to be able to have a few moments to speak with her. She's a very intelligent woman.
Cool. Well, I'm going to use your connection and get you to send her an email after this podcast.
And no say, problem.
Hey, Brian Carlos from New Zealand wants to interview you. So wonderful. And I love hearing about people's behavior odysseys. So thank you very much for sharing that, Hayley.
No problem.
For this next question, can we start to talk now about what a popo is? For those that don't know, what do APOPO do?
APOPO is a Belgian NGO, actually. It's headquarters in Tanzania. Essentially, we train giant African rats, which are native to most of sub-Saharan Africa. We use basic clicker training to save lives. We focus on landmine detection and tuberculosis detection, but the rats are capable of any detection task. It's just these are the two major pressing concerns in the areas that we work in.
And APOPO you said it was Belgium, it's an acronym. Isn't it?
Yes, I won't attempt to pronounce it. I'm very sorry. But it does stand for anti-personnel mine detection.
Okay, cool. I was hoping that you were going to pronounce it.
No.
So it's from Belgium. It's based in Tanzania. How did it all get started?
So our founder is Bart Wietjens. He's a Belgian man. He lived in East Africa for a long time and he kept rats as a child. And obviously they have an excellent sense of smell. And he was kind of looking around at this problem of landmines, especially in Africa where people cannot afford to have them removed. It's an expensive, costly process and also very time consuming. Bart Wietjens kind of saw an opportunity for a detection animal that's much, much cheaper than the existing canine technology. And it kind of really snowballed from there. We took some rats back to Belgium to see if we could first even breed them in captivity and to do some initial behavioral testing. And then we moved back to Tanzania where we have our training minefields. The rats get trained up here and then they get sent to various areas where they're needed.
And how long ago was this?
20 years now. It's our 20th anniversary this year since we started operations.
So I think you also just said the name of this podcast episode. We're going to call it Basic Clicker Training to Save Lives. I like that.
Excellent.
I mean, APOPO is helping poor people with big problems, isn't it?
Mm, definitely. And that's what got me so excited about it. This is very basic science applied to these problems that have seemed really intractable, that seemed they would require a lot of money and time. And these rats, using very simple technology, they can find the mines, they can find the tuberculosis much cheaper, much faster. It's making a real measurable difference.
Mm, and you said you put the rats onto training minefields, and from my research, I understand that the rats, they're not heavy enough, which makes them a good animal to use for this, are they, to set the landmines off?
Yeah, the males get up to 1.2 kilos, and that's still far too light to set off a mine compared to canine detectors. They do occasionally meet with misfortune. So we've never had an accident with our rats. It's just not possible for these animals to set the mines off.
Cool, I'm glad we talked about that, because I think there might have been some people at home going, what, you put them on training fields?
That's always the first question, and it's a fair enough question, but no, they take 9 months to train and...
And you call these rats hero rats, don't you?
Yeah, we call them hero rats. Obviously, from the human's point of view, it's a very dangerous and difficult and tiring job. These rats work extremely well for an extremely long time. And we put a lot of effort and time into our animals. They all have names. They're definitely not getting sent out onto minefields to get blown up.
And additionally, you guys are getting the locals to be trainers, aren't they? You're not bringing in animal trainers from overseas to train these rats up. These are just locals training the rats and working for Apopo.
Yeah, that was another thing that really got me excited about Apopo in the first place. Any of our rats can be operated by someone with 2 years of primary school education. The whole point is this, we're trying to create resilience and economies in communities, and that definitely involves hiring locals. We also try to hire as many women as we can, but definitely most of the trainers I worked with had a very low level of English, maybe not necessarily a lot of other employment opportunities. So we have a really dedicated staff. It's been really impressive working with these trainers.
So low levels of English, but they spoke giant pouch rat. They spoke
most assuredly.
with a clicker and some banana in their hands. Is that what?
Exactly. It's very low tech, especially with the landmine training. It's essentially just a field, a rope, a clicker, and a banana.
Awesome. So there is someone that works for Apopo that trains all the trainers? Or how does that all work?
Actually, I was there by myself for a significant chunk of the time, but we've been very fortunate in the last year to have Dr. Cindy Fass join us as our head of training and research. But, you know, Apopo's been going for 20 years. We have some pretty strong SOPs in place. So really the Mzungus or the foreigners are coming in as a more scientific role, as an advisory role, and to definitely keep up the trainers' upkeeping. As we know, humans tend to slip if they're not reminded. But these trainers are very, very dedicated and excellent at their jobs.
And we talked about helping out poor people with big problems. Mm-hmm. And landmines obviously are a huge problem, and they're international.
Mm-hmm.
With lots of different conflicts going on. How many countries is Apopo currently operating?
Currently, yeah, all of our rats are trained in Tanzania, as I mentioned. We're also in Angola, Cambodia we've just started. We've just finished clearing Mozambique, and we'll be moving to Zimbabwe.
On top of the landmine clearing, as we've already mentioned, the rats are also helping out with tuberculosis,
mm-hmm.
a big issue in Tanzania and these other countries.
Yeah, tuberculosis, maybe your listeners will know it as consumption. It's actually the largest infectious cause of death in the world. I think it was 10 million deaths last year. No, sorry, 4 million deaths and 10 million new infections. It's a really nasty disease that people seem to have forgotten still exists. And it mostly affects the breadwinners of the family, like the men that are working in factories and the farms and things like that. So they become incapacitated, they bring that home to their family, and then everyone kind of gets sick. The problem with tuberculosis is it's incredibly difficult to diagnose. We have human technicians looking at sputum samples from the lung under microscope, but obviously maybe their equipment isn't very good, they're incredibly overworked, so their sensitivity is only about 50%. But even humans can detect tuberculosis on the breath in advanced cases. It kind of smells like a tarry odour. So what we've done is train rats up to detect that particular collection of volatile organic compounds that's emitted by the bacteria that causes tuberculosis, and the rats are much more accurate and much, much faster. So I'm more excited about the tuberculosis program, to be honest. It's my area of what I mostly worked in.
Yeah, and did I read that? You have to correct me on the actual numbers here, but it was something like a rat can do 4 days worth of human work in 20 minutes or something?
That's correct. A rat can assess 100 samples in 20 minutes or even less, and it would take a human technician looking at slides under a microscope 4 days to do the exact same amount of work.
Wow, so the money just being saved.
One of our biggest problems is we don't have enough samples. We're constantly fighting against extinction rather than too much work. We have too little.
Now, we've spoken about some of the reasons why rats were chosen for this work over canines, one being they're light and they're not going to set the minds off. That's with regards to the mind training anyway. Mm-hmm. What are the other benefits of using rats in this context?
Well, specifically to tuberculosis, rats cannot contract human tuberculosis, but in a general sense for any kind of detection work, these rats are extremely cheap and they're omnivorous, so you can feed them pretty much anything. They're very small, so we can house them very cheaply. They breed easily. But I think the most interesting thing for me is any human that is trained in the Apopo SOPs can operate any of our animals. We can ship them halfway across the world and they will work just as well for any person. For me, that's their main advantage. We can train animals in one place, send them somewhere else, train trainers in those local places, and the locals there operate these animals.
Yeah, there's some big benefits. And with regards to their smell, what's their smell like, would you say, in comparison to canines?
There's definitely limited evidence. Obviously, it's Africa, so the physiological, neurophysiological evidence does point that they're comparable, if not better than dogs. Their olfactory bulb's very large. They've got a large brain in general, a lot of neuroreceptors. I train my rats down to detect 0.0000001% of a particular smell.
That's mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely comparable to dogs, if not better.
Hey, fantastic. And thank you so much for sharing that. That was a lot of fun to learn about. For our next question, I wanted to talk specifically about the training of a TB detection rat. I read on the website, and I think you already mentioned it, it takes about 9 months.
Mm-hmm. So we breed our own animals. They're kept with their mother until 6 weeks of age, and then we handle them between 2 and 4 weeks and get them really habituated to humans, different sights and smells, so we can pick them up and kind of handle them. After that, we get a single tuberculosis positive sample that's also been indicated by other rats. So that's kind of like a safety guard. This positive sample's been found positive by the clinics. As we know, they're not particularly accurate, so we have the rats indicate as well as a backup. So we've got the most positive sample that we can find, like a confirmed true positive, and we just teach a nose poke response over that sample in a cage with holes in the bottom of the floor. So we place a positive sample under one of these holes. The rat just has to keep its nose in that hole for 3 seconds. The trainer clicks, they run to the end of the cage and get some food. So it's a very basic tuberculosis smell, keep your nose in the hole, click, feed. Once they've kind of got that behavior, we start introducing negatives and training up this discrimination response. The rats can only pause over the positive sample and not the negatives. Once they have demonstrated that they're relatively accurate, we just increase the complexity, increase the number of samples, and make it a more and more difficult task until we consider these rats operationally accredited within 9 months, at least 90% accurate and 90% specific. So that means they're rejecting most of the negatives. That makes sense.
Yeah, and so their job is to find the samples that humans missed.
Yes, so we used clinic positive samples to arrange schedules of intermittent reinforcement. We rely on generalization to these TB positive but clinic negative samples. Rats don't get rewarded for indicating on those. But we take those samples and we retest them using our slightly better technology and well-trained technicians. If that secondary test comes back positive, we call the clinics. The rats can be thought of as kind of second-line screening. The clinics do the first line. We get all those samples and the rats test those same samples again to catch more of the positives that the clinics missed.
And this training process is similar for the mine rats?
Essentially the same. For both tuberculosis and landmine rats, we require them to walk. So in the landmines, they trace a grid over the landmine, and with tuberculosis detection, they're in a linear cage and that they have to walk along. So it's essentially teaching them that the target smell, whether it be TNT or tuberculosis or anything you could imagine, we associate that with the indication response, either a nose poke or scratching at the ground. The trainer clicks, click equals food.
And do any of the rats ever fail the accreditation process? What's the graduation rate like?
Our graduation rate has fluctuated over the years. I think now probably about 70 or 80%. And that's definitely something we've been working on to get this at 100%. There's no reason why a rat can't do it. We are an NGO, so we do not put our animals down. They get retired and used for photo opportunities and things like that.
And what do you put down to potential failure rates, and how can we increase this to the goal of ideally 100%, would you say? Do you think there's much individual variation in your experience between the rats?
I think partially. In my time there, we had one or two rats that were just aggressive and we couldn't habituate them, so we couldn't even begin training. For some other rats, maybe the sample flow was not ideal, and maybe some clinic positives were actually clinic negatives. Maybe our training sample set wasn't ideal. That's just something that comes with the territory of trying to do research in these resource poor areas. But I think just as we have more money and time to put into research and grow and train our trainers, I think the next few years are going to be really exciting for Apopo.
Yeah, cool. And you've shared a video with me that I will hopefully share in the podcast write-up of one of these rats being trained. There's really a lot of cool videos floating around online of Apopo, though. I've seen quite a few of them. Is there anywhere particularly you can direct people to go check out some of these vids?
I believe Apopo has a YouTube channel, and also Apopo has a website, www.apopo.org, and like latest press releases and stuff like that is updated constantly on the website if you want to see like the latest videos.
All right, fantastic. So I'll put a link to the Apopo website, try to find the Apopo YouTube channel, and also embed the video you shared with me in the podcast write-up so you guys can go and check that out. Hey, I know that everyone listening is going to be absolutely loving this. So thank you very much for sharing everything so far, Hayley.
worries.
We're going on, because I was hoping to dive a little bit deeper now into your personal PhD research. Can you walk us through this?
Sure. My supervisor says I should be able to sum up my PhD in two sentences. Essentially, my PhD involves how do we train an animal to detect a stimulus when we are not able to detect the stimulus. So with things like lights and sounds, we can program that via a computer, and we know we are showing this animal a wavelength of 230 per se. With odor, it's not possible to do that. So essentially, I've been using scents commonly used in the fragrance industry, like rose and lemon and things like that, diluting them down. And then we can train our animals using the same protocols that we use for our operational rats, but not having to worry if our positives are truly positive or our negatives are truly negative. So essentially, my PhD, I trained up some of these rats using APOPO's protocols, but these controlled scents. I tried to find the lowest concentration at rats wouldn't work. I think I mentioned that number before. Yeah, just essentially investigating variables that might be thought to affect their accuracy. The penultimate experiment of my PhD, though, is investigating peak shift. I'm not sure how familiar your listeners will be with that. Essentially, if you train an animal on a particular stimulus, say 50% strength, and you then present an animal with a range of scents from 0 to 100, the most responding will be over that 50% where the rat had previously received reinforcement. What happens if we still reinforce at 50% but never reinforce at 20%? Responding should shift away from 50% and up over to 60. We've taught the rat that low concentration is bad and higher concentration is good. Theoretically, the animal should shift their responding to an even stronger stimulus. What we've found operationally with our tuberculosis detection is that because the clinics are so insensitive, they're saying a sample is a very strong concentration, but it's actually a weak concentration. They're saying that some samples have zero concentration, i.e. they're tuberculosis negative, but they actually have a low concentration. So we may be training our tuberculosis rats on these high concentrations, never reinforcing them for low concentrations, and we're actually shifting their responding behavior away from the low concentrations, i.e. the samples that clinics have a hard time finding. I'm still analyzing my data, but it does seem that rats do exhibit this peak shift behavior with odor, which people haven't really managed to show before. Fingers crossed the numbers all work out.
Yeah, right. So we're potentially missing out on some samples of people who do have tuberculosis just at very low levels.
Yes, so the clinics are finding the tuberculosis that's present in high numbers. People that are going to these clinics are already coughing, they're already sick, they already have a high number of bacilli. It's the people that are going, they don't feel particularly sick, the technicians can't find bacilli in their lungs, but they do have it, they're going home and infecting people. Those are the people we want our rats to find, these low concentration. But if we can't train them on those long concentrations because the clinics can't find them, how do we go about shifting their behavior towards that?
So how do we go about shifting their behavior towards
that? To be honest, research in Africa is definitely more difficult, just the logistic and lack of resources and things like that. My PhD is definitely just the first few steps along this path of how do we create these viable training sets for odors when we don't know what we're actually showing the animals.
You've done a few other articles as well, is that correct?
Our biggest study lately was our accuracy study. So that compared our tuberculosis detecting rats' performance against the gold standard, which is culture, which takes 6 weeks and is very expensive, against GeneXpert, which is a machine that measures genetic material in sputum samples, and against the various human technicians. So it's really involved with that, just finding out just how good are our rats compared to these other existing technologies. Essentially, our rats are nearly as sensitive as GeneXpert, which is just one step below the gold standard, but they're a little less specific, so they make quite a few false alarms. This, I suspect, is related to their training sets. We don't have these pure negatives and pure positives to show them. But what the study does show is that our rats are faster, they're cheaper, they're more sensitive than the clinics, but they are less specific. In a perfect world, they would be a first-line screening to cut out the true negatives, and then they would go on to a second set of screening to catch out those false positives. We don't live in a perfect world. They are rats. People have a lot of social anxieties and stories around them. But yeah, our rats are definitely more sensitive, faster and cheaper, just a little less specific.
And that's going to speak to a lot of people, isn't it? The cheapness and speed of which.
Yeah. I think, yeah, one of the major concerns people have with animal detection technology is that it's not reliable. I crunched a lot of numbers. Our rats are almost perfectly reliable. If you give them the same sample twice, they'll give you the same answer. So often it's less about how effective these animals are and actually taking that research and taking those conclusions and actually working with governments and working with organizations to get that into operation and actually start saving people's lives. But if you don't have the numbers in the first place, then we can't go anywhere.
And what kind of things can we do to challenge people's preconceived stereotypes about the effectiveness of rats or just even rats?
Well, I think studies like the accuracy study are invaluable. We have some very hard numbers to show that our rats are just as good, if not better. Apopo is an NGO, and as every scientist says in every organization in every area, we always need more research, we always need more funds, we always need more support.
Science.
Yes.
Hey, sadly, we are nearly at the end, but that's okay because we're also heading into one of my favorite parts of the podcast show, and this is story time. Hayley, can you please share a favorite story from your time in Tanzania working with the rats and something that helped teach you about behavior and training?
Sure, I have an excellent story, actually. So the rats we worked with are called giant African pouched rats because they have cheek pouches similar to our hamsters. So they'll go out and forage and put the food in their cheeks and bring it back to their burrow to eat later. I suppose it's a unique challenge when you're trying to reward animals while they're working. So one particular rat, a young rat, training him on a small landmine field. So he's walking along, he finds a mine, he sits, he scratches over the correct place, the trainer clicks, the rat runs back and gets his banana. Unfortunately, this rat puts his banana in his cheeks and keeps working, keeps walking along this grid. He finds another mine. Instead of scratching and waiting to listen to the click like he's supposed to, he sits on top of the mine, takes the banana out of his cheeks, looks at the trainer and eats it. So he'd essentially reinforced himself. I thought that was a really fantastic illustration of how we're working with a particular species with their own little idiosyncrasies. And this rat was obviously just a bit too full and didn't really need an extra banana for that second indication. He had already had some. Lay people that come and see them, they comment about how they're not very rat-like. And they've definitely got a very rich behavioral repertoire, like a lot of different behaviors. And there's a few standout superstar workers that are really got their Protestant work ethic going on. But I definitely think the work in and of itself is reinforcing.
Yeah, cool. So for everyone listening to this podcast, you mentioned numerous times there are some challenges of working in Tanzania and being an NGO. How can people listen to this podcast help out? I saw on your website you've got something called Hero Gifts.
Mm-hmm. So you can buy Apopo merchandise. I think we have t-shirts and keychains and things like that. We also have a program called Adopt a Rat where you can actually give us some money and we'll send you updates on a particular rat, how that rat's doing, how many lives the animals saved that week, things like that. We are an NGO, and if you want us to keep doing good science, you should give us money.
And you can also use kind of purchase a rat house or something, can't you? And provide that kind of support by just providing funding for basic things like housing.
Definitely, yeah. Like Popo's finances are very transparent. You can look it all up on the website. Yeah, any donations, you know, goes to food, bananas, and sticks for the rats to chew on. The rats sleep in clay pots. They tend to break every year. So your money goes towards making these rats happy and healthy and comfortable. We find enriched rats tend to work better.
It's generalizable. And it does now bring us to our final question for this episode. Hayley, what would you like to see happen with disease detection animals or just detection animals in general over the coming decade? What's possible in this area?
The possibilities are limitless. Starting to see some really exciting stuff with detecting pest or endangered species, especially in New Zealand, finding rust in factory pipes, disease detection of every type, diabetes, anything at all. If the research is there, if you're interested, olfaction is not an easier area to work in, but it's incredibly rewarding. I think as more numbers come out showing that these animals are reliable, and as we develop even better protocols for training these animals on scents that we cannot detect ourselves, I'm really excited to see what happens in the future and a huge range of applications.
And we've had someone on the podcast before talk about diabetic alert dogs. And you mentioned that there's some research being done and with dogs being able to detect cancer.
That seems more than feasible. We've also looked at it into it at Apopo. I think with any discrimination training, the issue is collecting an adequate training set. We need positives that we know are positive, and we need negatives that we know are negative. And often, if the diagnostic technology is so good, we don't need the animals in the first place. So this is where really the animal training comes in. We need to be on the ball people watching out for extinction, you know, these correct indication responses. Are the rats actually, or the dogs, or whatever species you're working with, are the animals actually responding to stimuli you want them to be?
Super interesting. That does sadly bring us to the end now. But before we wrap up, from myself and on behalf of everyone listening, Hayley, thank you so much for making time to come on the show today. It's really appreciated.
No worries, then. Thank you.
If you have enjoyed this episode today and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about the most positive and less intrusive ways of influencing behavior, then as mentioned at the start of the episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn all about how you can connect with like-minded, positive reinforcement-based animal trainers from around the world. Whether you train or are thinking about training dogs, cats, other pets, birds, zoo animals, implementing techniques within your vet clinic, or any other area where behavior management is required, then you will love all the different ways you can join in. Forums, WhatsApp chats, private Facebook group, or one of the members-only live web classes. There's something there for absolutely everyone, and we're really looking forward to having you join the community. That's it for this episode, though. We'll wrap it up there, and thanks again so much for listening. But for now, it's time to scoot, little Newt. You'll hear from us again soon.